Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel over here.
On the ones and the twos. Uh-huh. We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we'd like to acknowledge that. We be drinking and we be swearing.
Yes, we do. It's true.
You're welcome.
Facts are facts, America.
This is the show where we talk about whatever we want because we don't have a format. Mm-hmm. And this is, a mini-sode. We're doing it.
We're doing the mini-fang today. So today's mini-sode, because we don't have no format, today's mini will be a little bit different from the kinds of minis we've done for most of this season. Today, I'm actually going to be doing a bit of an extended cocktail segment.
Yes.
This will be leading up to and leading into next week's full episode, when we will be sharing a specific recipe for a certain type of mixed drink. But today, I'm really going to be just talking about the history of that category of mixed drinks. If you listen enough, you should recall that we try to keep our topics for our main stories, our full episodes, a secret from one another, so that it's sort of a surprise when we're listening.
Yes.
But we do share dates and sometimes certain details with each other, just to make sure, A, that we aren't covering the same topic, mm-hmm. and B, so that I know enough information to be able to find a cocktail that would pair appropriately with that era.
I give you the time period and, the region.
Yeah. When Stephanie told me that her story for next week's full episode was from the 1670s,
yes.
my immediate reaction was just,
how dare
no!
you?
No, don't do this to me.
I felt very guilty.
I mean, it was gonna happen eventually.
Yeah, so. I had wanted to do this story for a while.
Okay,
I'm like I just gotta get it out.
Yeah, basically, as much as I hate cocktails from the 1980s because they're super syrupy, sweet, and artificially flavored, and
cheesy
just,
in general.
The only thing worse is colonial era cocktails, especially early colonial era cocktails. But that's really just because the golden age of cocktails didn't come until the mid-1800s. And in the colonial era, most of the most popular drinks that people were drinking were just beer or cider.
Applejack.
Applejack, maybe rum. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would mix some kind of spirit with water and a little sugar and have a sling. We've had a whiskey sling on the show before during a colonial era episode.
Maybe they're making a crambamble.
A crambamble, yeah. we've also had a stone fence, which y'all know we were not a big fan of. It was just the wrong stone fence.
I think tasted like a foot, y'all.
Yeah, it I think it really had a lot more to do with the cider not being a great tasting cider, and it would have been better if we'd used a different cider.
It would have been great if we used a cider that tasted good.
Yeah. But from all the research that I did, that was what cider probably was tasting like in the colonial era. But anyway, so the drinks in this era were, for the most part, pretty boring, pretty simple and basic. And
they were doing their best.
I mean, drinking beer, drinking hard cider, whatever, that's fine. Good for you. You're having a good time. Mm-hmm. But for me, I want to be able to share a recipe. I want to talk about the history of a recipe.
Yes.
So we can't
rum
just
rum and
have
water
a beer.
Doesn't do it for you.
Exactly. Yeah. so these recipes were kind of boring with one major exception, and that is punch. Punch was a lot more exciting. We haven't really dove super deep into punch. I've done a couple punch recipes, but they were more sort of later era punches when things got a little bit more complex. Going all the way back to 1670, though,
I know,
is difficult even to find a punch recipe that old. This was a little challenging. So when I started really looking for punch recipes that date that far back, it pretty much immediately became clear that there wasn't going to be a lot to choose from. And there were a lot of kind of strange ingredients and sort of concepts that I was going to have to explain going into this recipe before I got even to the recipe part. So I was like, you know what?
Yeah.
I need to just do a mini-sode. This is too big of a topic to try and squeeze into a cocktail
segment.
It would
be a really long episode.
Yeah, exactly. Like the time
hours.
We did the Mai Tai history, where the cocktail segment alone was half an hour long. So I decided the history of punch deserves its own minisode, and that's what we're doing. Next week, again, we will discuss a specific recipe for a punch from the 1670s in colonial America that will pair with Stephanie's story. But today we're just sort of doing the overall history of punch. A drink that most people today, when you say punch, most people think of like Sprite and lime sherbet mixed together for kids' parties.
Hawaiian punch.
Oh, yeah. Hawaiian punch.
God, I used to drink that shit as a kid. You know, they like made it into like a soda.
Did they? No, yeah. I did not know that. It's just sugar.
Exactly.
But so is soda.
Yeah.
Okay, so no one really knows exactly when or who invented punch, but most historians agree that it likely originated with expat British sailors living in India.
Oh.
They were there with the British East India Company.
Stealing their resources.
Yes, absolutely. That's, you know, what better history to go to pair with early America than the theft of resources?
Yeah, colonial times. That was the name of the game. Imperialism.
Yeah. So these British sailors were looking for a way to mask these unfamiliar spirits that were popular in India and Southeast Asia, pairing them with other flavors to sort of mask those flavors with ingredients that were local to India and Indonesia, places like that, because that's where they were and that's all they could get their hands on.
Sounds like those would be delicious flavors
needed
to be masked.
Yeah. But... Well, it was just the spirits. They weren't familiar with the spirits. Oh, so they were trying to mask those with these other flavors.
Got it.
And it worked, and punch became what it is today because of this. So the first known time that the word punch appears in writing was in a letter written in 1632 by a Brit who was stationed in India, working for the British East India Company. He wrote that he was having punch. He was writing back to England saying that he was drinking this drink that was popular with all the sailors there. And everyone's like, ooh, what's that? Fancy. Most of my information for today's minisode comes from a book by cocktail historian David Wondrich. Fittingly enough, the book is called Punch.
Okay.
It's real good if you enjoy this kind of history. I use another book of his called Imbibe for pretty much all of my 19th century cocktail research. And I was in Detroit a few months ago and at a bar, and they had like a little retail section with a bunch of different cocktail books. Mm. And I saw Punch. I was like, oh, I need that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I had it because it made today's research so much easier. So Wondrich said that British sailors in the 17th century usually drank about 10 pints of beer a day, every day.
Whoa.
On the boats. Hmm. But when they sailed into the tropics, into these tropical regions, the beer spoiled really quickly. So that's when they turned to punch. He said, quote, "Punch began in the British East India trade, as far as we can tell. Records are pretty spotty about this sort of thing, but English sailors ran out of beer and they ran out of wine, and you can't have a boat full of English people without something to drink."
It's true.
So some bright spark had the idea, what if we make artificial wine from spirits? Once they got to East Asia and South Asia, everybody there was drinking spirits. And somebody said, okay, let's take that and turn it back into wine.
What does that even mean?
I'm about to get into it. Yeah. Okay. So basically,
artificial wine?
He believes that they used citrus juice to replicate the acidity of wine. And they used water to dilute the spirits to the strength of wine. And they used sugar because at the time, English sailors preferred sweeter wines over dry wines. So they weren't really trying to make wine. They were just trying to make something that had a similar flavor and the approximately same strength as wine.
Okay.
So using these other ingredients, citrus was very popular and very prevalent in Indonesia and India at the time. So they were like, okay, let's just give these spirits a little bit of acidity and water them down and sweeten them up. He was interviewed by NPR and he said, they made it with local ingredients in India and Indonesia in the early 1600s. They were 13,000 miles away from any source of English beer or wine, and they had nothing to drink. And English sailors respond very poorly to that.
I get it.
So we don't know for certain where the name punch came from. In 1676, a member of the British East India Company claimed that The word punch comes from the Indian word paunch, which means five. He was basically saying that the paunch signified the five core, like, central components, the pillars of building a punch. Mm. Spirit, citrus, sweetener, water, and sometimes spice, usually nutmeg.
Okay.
David Wondrich doesn't really buy that theory, even though it was written down back then. He says it's a little too complicated. It came about 40 years after punch had already been around for a while. Mm-hmm. So he thinks that it's much more likely that punch was named for the liquor barrels that stored these spirits called puncheon barrels.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. But no matter who invented it or where the name comes from, we do know that punch was made popular by English sailors, especially when they started sailing back to London, bringing all their fancy stolen goods with them and docking in London. It actually became very fashionable for Londoners to go down and visit the docks and sit on these boats and drink punch with the sailors.
That sounds like a great time.
Yeah. It sort of started with the investors who are funding these excursions to India and Indonesia. They would, when the boats docked, these investors would go down and sit on the boat with the captain and the sailors, and they would bring their friends and everybody would sit around and drink this big bowl of this like new trendy communal beverage. And that's where punch blew up. That's how it blew up.
Mm, that's cool.
Yeah. So because of this, British trade routes obviously dictated the ingredients that were used to make punch. Citrus, tea, and nutmeg all came from Southeast Asia. And the most popular base spirit that was originally used to make punch in the 17th century was something called arrack. It's A-R-R-A-C-K.
Didn't you use that once in a
I've never had it. I think you can still get it. Well, you
maybe
can
you
still get
about it.
It
or something.
I definitely probably did talk about it at some point. It would be distilled from different ingredients depending on where it was made.
Like rice or whatever?
Yeah. In India, it was often made from coconut palms.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But in Indonesia, they have something called Batavia arrack that was made with sugarcane and red rice. Mm. Arrack could be clear or dark, but either way, it often tasted like a dark aged rum. And because it was used to make punch when punch was originally invented, that was definitely the most popular base spirit. And sort of the preferred base spirit, even when punch made it back to Europe.
Hmm.
Arrack was very popular in Europe for several years, and even in colonial America, we were making punch with arrack. But by the time it made it from India to England and down to the colonies, it was very, very expensive. So starting in the 1670s, we started substituting Caribbean rum for arrack, just because it was easier to get, it was already here, and it was much, much cheaper. And an English explorer wrote in 1697 that when ships docked from the Caribbean, they were, quote, always well stored with rum, sugar, and lime juice to make punch, to hearten their men when they are at work. So I think this is a good time for us to take a little break.
Yeah.
We're just drinking some whiskey right now, but we'll have some punch soon. All right, be right back.
Yes.
So have you ever thought about what would happen if your airline window popped out?
Or if you can build a jetpack using only machine guns.
Well, we found out you could, but you really shouldn't. Hi, I'm Jill Chacha.
And I'm Marissa Riley.
Together, we have one comedy science-y show called, well, that's interesting.
It's for folks who like to learn about weird stuff, like how hair can grow between your teeth and what happens if the moon disappears.
If you need a break from the world or need interesting stuff to bring up at a party when those happen again, come on by.
Find Well That's Interesting wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay.
We're back.
Click, click again.
Click, click.
Stephanie's, that's her...
One of my New Year's resolutions is to learn how to do the click, click. I can do one click.
You did it.
But I can't do two.
Rapid fire.
I can't. It's the pressure. Gotta go.
I'm busy. I have an appointment. So because rum, sugar, and limes by the 1670s and late 1600s, because these things were so prevalent and plentiful in the Caribbean, pirates also got really into punch. There's all these stories about like people being lured onto pirate ships with punch only to find out that they were pirates and not like other trading ships.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the trading ships were just pirates, though.
In the movies, pirates always tend to be drinking rum straight out of the bottle, but yes, there's all this evidence that basically says, like, that's bullshit.
Really?
It's just what they were doing in the movies to make it, to make them look like big, strong.
Disney lied to me.
Yeah. There's way more evidence that they were more likely drinking punch. That, like, all the pirates would have been drinking a big bowl of punch.
I'm just, like, thinking of them grating nutmeg.
Yeah.
Like, being really masculine.
Yeah, they're a little nutmeg grater.
They're like, boop.
Yeah, dropping. They're not like me, all constantly dropping the nutmeg into the punch. So back in Europe, Europeans started eventually to substitute French brandy for their arrak. For the same reasons we were doing that in the colonies, French brandy was a lot cheaper and a lot easier to get. It's only coming from France and not all the way from India.
Yeah,
they did still use arrak when they could get their hands on it, but brandy was way cheaper. Eventually, thanks to the expansion of the trade routes, rum also did become very popular in England too. And in fact, as the decades went on and punch recipes got fancier and fancier, fancier.
Oh, I love that.
The recipes started calling for combinations of different spirits. They would use arrak and brandy, or arrak and rum, or rum and brandy. But kind of just to show off, like, I can afford both.
Yeah.
Other ingredients in punches started getting really fancy too, and even the punch bowls started getting really elaborate and fancy. They would be made out of, like, sterling silver with, like, cherubs on the sides. And if you were rich, that's what a punch bowl would look like. Spirits, tea, sugar, citrus, and nutmeg were all expensive ingredients. Lemons at this point, lemons alone, converted to today's dollar, one lemon would cost about $8. In today's money. Yeah. Because it was being imported. In the 1690s in London, a 3-quart bowl of punch cost about a half a week's wages.
That's wild.
Yeah. But poor people were drinking a lot of punch too.
Yeah.
Probably punches with lower quality ingredients or not as many ingredients in it. But they were drinking it. So let's talk about these ingredients. So first we have our spirits. I've already mentioned that arrak was the OG, and brandy became a popular substitute in Europe. Rum became a popular substitute in the colonies. Later on, combinations of those ingredients were popular. But then we were also using other ingredients. Wine was a popular to use in punches. Port became popular. Other fortified wines like Madeira and Sherry were popular. And then as things progress over the years, they also started using gin in punches. We've had a gin punch on the show before. And then they eventually started using whiskey, especially Irish whiskey and scotch were very popular ingredients. So that's our first pillar of the five pillars of punch. Then we have our citrus. You could really use any citrus you want, but limes were the most popular initially. That's how they were making it always in the very beginning. When punch first hit the scene, it was always limes. As the years went on, lemons far surpassed limes in popularity. Most punches in the 1800s were made with lemon. The third pillar of punch is your sugar. Early punches would have been made using a raw, unrefined sugar, just because that was what would been available. Usually these sugars came in these really hard or sometimes sticky, like loaves or cones. Unrefined sugars didn't just add sweetness, though. Because they were unrefined, because they were raw sugars, they all had their own distinct flavors, and they would taste different depending on where they came from. Indian sugar would taste different from Indonesian sugar, which would taste different from Caribbean sugar, just sort of depending on how and where it was made and what it was made from. Later, as sugar refining got better, sugar became whiter and much less flavorful and more just about sweetness.
Yeah.
But it still did usually come in these, like, hard cone-shaped loaves. While we're on the subject of citrus and sugar, we have to talk a little bit about oleosaccharum. Some of the earliest versions of oleosaccharum, when it was sort of first thought up, what people were doing was rubbing these hard loaves of sugar on the citrus, basically using the sugar as a grater on the side of the citrus to try and, like, exfoliate the citrus skin to pull the oils out into the sugar. So you know how when you have, I know you don't bake a lot, but if you have a bag of brown sugar and you forget to seal it or don't seal it very well, it gets really hard, like super rock hard if it sits around for too long. These early sugar loaves would have been even harder than that. Like, really, you would have to, like, break them up with, like, a hammer.
Oh, Oh my God.
So David Wondrich, who wrote this punch book, says that he has tried using modern forms of unrefined raw sugar. There's a Indian sugar called jaggery that's very similar to what we would have been using in the Caribbean. It's a sugar cane sugar, but it's totally raw, totally unrefined. It comes in these little like cone-shaped loaves. But he's tried using jaggery to do this, and it's too soft. He says it falls apart.
Wow.
But so eventually, over the years, as sugar refining got better and softer, people started figuring out that it would be easier to just peel the citrus. You pull off sort of the outermost part, leaving the white pith behind, and then oleosaccharum, they would muddle the citrus peels into the sugar to pull the oils out. This process is really important to punch making because it makes for a much richer and brighter citrus flavor because you're using the citrus oils as well as the juice and not just the juice. A similar concept is really popular in baking even today. As somebody who bakes a lot, if you want to make a really good lemon cake, especially like I love to make a bundt cake, a lemon bundt cake.
Yeah.
The first thing you do is you zest your lemons into your bowl of sugar and then you mix it up. You mix the lemon zest into the sugar to make sure that the sugar pulls the lemon oils out into the sugar and it flavors the sugar with lemon oil. It's going to make for a much brighter lemon flavor in your cake.
Yeah.
Because that lemon oil is distributed rather than just using lemon juice. It really does make a huge difference in getting that lemon flavor. So as for the juice of the lemons, they're still using this to make punches. But before the alcohol was added, before any of the other flavors were added, obviously the first step, you make your oleosaccharum. The very next thing you do, you add the citrus juice back into the oleosaccharum to try and dissolve the sugar into the juice, and then you strain out the citrus peels. Once it's liquid, the sugar is dissolved, you strain out the citrus peels so they're not like floating around in your punch. Doing this process is called making a shrub or making a sherbet. So it's the same, you know, the same name as the thing that people are putting in punch today. People put orange sherbet, lime sherbet in punch when they make like kids' party punch. I don't know if that's exactly where it comes from, this like process of mixing citrus zest and juice and sugar together to make a sherbet. I don't know if that's where it comes from. I didn't really look super far into it because I already had enough to talk about today.
No, this is a lot.
But it's a sort of an interesting fact. I feel like it probably does.
Probably.
That's like where that that word comes from and why we still use it to make punch. So your next pillar of punch is your spice. Nutmeg, obviously, is the most popular. I talk about nutmeg all the fucking time on this show.
What else would you like, cinnamon or something?
Yeah, they certain other spices did sort of become popular, but nutmeg is like the main one.
Yeah.
Not even like a little bit more popular. It is the one.
Yeah.
Nutmeg is native to Indonesia, like limes. And it became an integral part in pretty much all early punch recipes. And of course, that tradition continued after America perfected the cocktail. We were still using nutmeg to make cocktails.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
I get it.
I have mentioned on the show before that it was really popular for rich people to have their own nutmeg that they would carry around with them.
Oh, yes.
They had these little sterling silver nutmeg carriers that would have a grater built into the lid.
That's cool.
And if you were rich enough, you would bring your sterling silver nutmeg thing to the bar, pop it open, and grate your nutmeg over your cocktail to be like, I'm rich enough to have my own fucking nutmeg, and you're not.
This was before they, before iPhones.
Yeah, totally.
This was their Apple Watch.
Exactly, yes. They had the newest version of the Nutmeg 10. Obviously, when you're making a punch, you want to use a fresh nutmeg rather than the jarred stuff. You know, the jarred stuff is fine, but it really does lose flavor very quickly. Wondrich wrote in this book, quote, "Anyone who would spice his or her punch with ground nutmeg out of a jar would make fettuccine Alfredo with the Parmesan that comes in a can." Whole nutmegs used to be of such value that wars were fought over them.
Yeah.
Now they are cheap. There's no excuse.
That's true.
And they really are cheap. I got a fucking boatload of them at Wegmans the other day for like $3. So, and a grater is like 10 bucks.
Yeah.
And it'll last you for a long ass time. So other spices were sort of popular in certain specific recipes, but other flavors were too. Some recipes call for like rose water or like orange blossom water.
Okay.
There were other things that people would use, but those tended
rose
to be specific
so
to
strong.
Yeah. Well, you would just use a little bit,
but still, yeah.
You can,
could be a lot.
Those things tended to be specific to certain punch recipes or how, like, certain places would make their punches, you know, in specific ways. Mm-hmm. And then your fifth and final pillar of punch is water. Basically, you just wanted to use water to dilute the punch down to the potency of about wine. So punch is a lot less powerful than cocktails are. Mm-hmm. Early on, though, people figured out that you could also substitute tea.
Yes.
Because tea has more flavor mm-hmm. than water. Green tea, in the early years, green tea was pretty much the only kind of tea that people would use to make punch. It's milder, it's more sort of subtle and elegant, delicate, sometimes floral. Mm. So they wanted these sort of delicate flavors in a punch. Later on, though, black tea also did become popular. We recently had the Fish House punch from the mid-1800s
that has
black tea and lemon. Basically tastes like a boozy Arnold Palmer. Mm. So good. And because tea has caffeine in it, people could party all night long. They would just be sitting, drinking their punch. Wondrich, in this book, actually calls it an early version of the vodka Red Bull.
Yeah.
So ice, while we're on the topic of water, ice wasn't really available when people were making punches in the early years. Mm-hmm. So most punches were consumed sort of cool. If you could make it in a cool place and store it in a cool place.
As cool as they could get it, exactly. Which is probably room temperature.
Yeah, totally. Especially in the summer, it would have been room temperature. Sometimes some punches were even served hot or at least warm mm-hmm. on purpose. But most of the time, you just tried to find the coolest place in your house and that's where you stored your punch. Later, though, as ice became easier to get your hands on, chilled punches became really popular. And people started putting, like, you would put, like, one big block of ice or an ice ring in your punch because, in theory, like, smaller surface area means it doesn't melt as fast, so you're not diluting the punch even mm-hmm. further. So those are the five pillars of punch.
Okay, very cool.
When punch hit the scene, it pretty much instantly blew up. It became just as popular in the colonies as it was in Europe. It took a little bit longer to get here, but once it was here, we were like, yes, this is it. This is the thing. I need this in my life. It is said that the founding fathers drank 76 bowls of punch in the celebration following the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh my God.
And these would be big ass bowls hilarious. Of punch too. I found all these accounts of like big parties that people had with like the bar tally called for like 30 bowls of punch, 200 bowls of punch, whatever.
Oh my God.
Eventually though, after reigning supreme in the cocktail scene for about 200 years, the popularity of punch did sort of start to dwindle, started to fade around the early to mid 19th century. Improvements in distilling meant that straight spirits tasted better and didn't need to be watered down or diluted.
Jazzed up.
Yeah, masked with flavor and citrus and sugar. Industrialization also meant that people just had less time to sit around at the pub drinking out of a big bowl of punch all day long.
Yeah.
Victorians were drinking less, but when they did drink, they had shorter periods of time to do it. It didn't take long for Americans, those enterprising innovators of self-sacrifice, to invent a single-serving punch called the cocktail. We needed something. We were busy. We were on our lunch break. We needed something. We could walk up to the bar, order a cocktail, toss it back, and get back to work.
Yeah. We're rugged individuals.
Yes. So while the punch was an English/Indian expat import, cocktails are pure American, baby. Wow. We need something we can drink fast and get back to work.
Yeah, and alone.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah.
The collective
is gone. It's very like this is my cocktail.
Yeah.
You're having a different cocktail.
It's mine's.
Exactly. This is not a communal experience anymore. So by the time Jerry Thomas wrote his cocktail guidebook in 1862, punches were kind of already a thing of the past at this point.
Wow.
There were a lot of punch recipes included in his book, but Wondrich points out that, quote, although he had many recipes in his book, they were probably fostered on him by publishers and were, in fact, obsolete.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was all about the cocktail. Some bars would still be serving punch, but like people, especially in America, people wanted a cocktail.
Yeah.
It was the new thing. Mm. Thankfully, today, classic 18th century style punches are starting to make a comeback in like cocktail lounges and fancy bars across the world.
I love that.
Some of the best cocktail bars in the country are now offering single servings of large batch punches. They'll make a big batch
yes.
and sell one cup at a time.
Yeah, I've seen that
happen. Yeah. Entire cocktail programs in some of the fanciest bars in the nation are being written around punch and devoted to punch. Mm-hmm. There's a bar in New York City called Dead Rabbit that is like has been voted like one of the best bars in the world many times. Mm-hmm. They serve punch as a welcome drink to every guest that walks in. You get a glass of punch when you come in the door.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
We need to go.
I know. I know. When it's safe to do so, we certainly will. there's a bar in London called The Punch Room.
Oh.
That only sells punch.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It is the world's first punch-only bar since the mid-1800s.
Wow.
And even our fancy bartender friend Zan lives his life for punch.
Yeah.
If we have a party, if he's having a party,
he's a punch master.
He needs to make a punch. Mm-hmm. It's his thing. It's his contribution to every party we have. He's going to make a punch. Yeah. So that's the history of punch in a nutshell, in a nutmeg holder.
Yes. Yeah, that was really, really fascinating. I feel more informed.
Yes.
As a lover of punch.
Yes. Yeah. So be sure to tune in next week when we will talk about a specific punch recipe, yes. A very early punch recipe, and how the ingredients were used in colonial America. And we'll finally drink some punch.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I didn't want to drink it yet because I want to talk about that specific recipe in the... We like to taste it while we're talking about
yes.
it.
Yes.
So tune in next week and we'll mm-hmm. be drinking this punch.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm clicking so much today. Just because I can.
Thank you. Yes. Because you can. So our drinks are empty. So I guess we're done. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tex Lurzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We could not do this without him. There was a door that opened.
I know. My neighbor, I need to give her some WD-40 for her hinges.
A late Christmas gift. Here you go.
With a bow on it. That's it.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.